and watched as the two girls hurried into the kitchen to fetch dinner. Had they cooked it? A wealthy family like Caleb's would probably be expected to hire servants, but the house was small and sorcerers liked their privacy. And yet, she found the idea of Sienna, or her young daughters doing all the cooking and cleaning, to be a little unbelievable. Perhaps the servants were merely expected to remain out of sight at all times. A tasty smell wafted up from the tureen as Marion put it down in front of her father and removed the lid. It was a fish stew, the fish heads clearly visible within the white sauce. Emily was surprised to see the bowl of cooked rice that accompanied it, although rice was fairly common at Whitehall. It might not grow anywhere near the city, but the combination of shipping lanes and preservation spells would allow merchants to bring it from the other side of the continent. The meal might look simple, yet it was, in many ways, an understated display of wealth. Only the richest citizens would be able to afford rice. General Pollock served Emily and Frida first, then his wife and children. Emily reached for her spoon, then stopped herself, remembering that etiquette forbade her from eating until everyone was served. Caleb, sitting opposite her, gave her a reassuring smile. Emily smiled back, wishing they were alone. They'd taken picnics into the mountains at Whitehall, back before the war, back before everything had changed. "Please tuck in," General Pollock said. He picked up the tureen and moved it to the center of the table. "Take more if you wish." "Thank you, Father," Caleb said. Emily picked up her spoon and took a sip of stew. It tasted strong, stronger than she'd expected. And yet, the more she ate, the more she grew to like it. The blandness of the rice and boiled vegetables complemented the fish nicely. It was definitely better than most of the food she'd eaten during the war. "So," Sienna said, holding up her spoon as though it was a knife, "what happened?" Emily glanced at General Pollock, who shrugged. "My wife can hear everything," he said dryly. "You can speak freely." In front of two impressionable kids, Emily thought. Sienna snorted. "Emily," she said, "what happened to my son?" Emily forced herself to look back at her. "The necromancer killed him," she said. He was blown to dust."
"I see," Sienna said.
"Details?" "We were out on patrol," Emily said. She had no wish to recite the entire story, but Sienna had a right to know. Besides, she'd probably get the rest of the tale from her husband. "We didn't know Gaius was a traitor. He sent Casper away, then attacked me. I beat him, only to discover we were cut off from the city. Armies were already on the march. There was no way we could get back before it was too late." Sienna nodded, inviting Emily to continue. "We decided we could strike directly at the necromancer himself," Emily said. "He was at Heart's Eye, so we went there. We battered our way into the school and challenged the necromancer. And then we fought." She sucked in her breath. There was so much she wanted to forget. Dua Kapala's incredible success, and the secret of his sanity. The moment when she'd watched in horror, helpless, as Casper died, and the sheer power of the revitalized Nexus Point reaching out through her to tear the necromancer apart. She didn't dare tell Sienna everything. "We had a plan," Emily said. "Casper died, making it work." It wasn't the complete truth, she knew, but it was true enough. Casper had died a hero, and that was all that mattered. Sienna studied her for a long, cold moment. Emily looked back at her, hoping, praying, that Sienna didn't ask too many questions. There were secrets that couldn't be shared. And yet, didn't Sienna have a right to know? Her son had died in the war.
"You could have saved him," Marion said. "Couldn't you?"
"No," Emily said. She'd been drained after the first battle. Even if she'd known what was about to happen, she doubted she could have done anything about it. "He was dead before I could do anything."
"Emily would have saved him if she could," Frida said sharply.
She shot Marion a challenging look.
"She's good at saving people."
"So I've heard."
Sienna's eyes had never left Emily's face.
"And he was a dueling champion, was he not?" He took the title from me, Emily confirmed. It wasn't entirely true, but Caspar had been impressive. She'd given him a tiny window of opportunity, and he'd used it perfectly, winning the duel in a single moment. He was the champion when he died. It wouldn't have brought him happiness. Sienna sounded tired. Tired and sad. It would only have gotten him killed. Emily bit down hard on the comment that came to mind. Caspar had worked hard to live up to his famous parents, the great military commander and the powerful sorceress, and he'd never felt as though he had managed to move out of their shadow. He'd been on the verge of trying to commit drunken suicide when she'd accepted his challenge. She knew he'd been a prideful ass. He'd been one of the luckiest people in the world. But she also understood precisely how he felt. He'd still been an apprentice when his friends were completing their own masteries. "He died a champion," Caleb said. "It was what he wanted." "He was young," Sienna snapped. For a moment, her mask slipped. Emily saw grief and sorrow before it became hidden again beneath her expressionless face. "He didn't know what he wanted." "He died a hero," General Pollock said, "and I will always be proud of him." There was a long silence. Emily felt awkward, as if she were intruding on a family's private grief. They'd invited her to stay with them, to attend the funeral, but part of her was tempted to leave. She could take Frida and find lodging somewhere nearby easily enough. It wasn't as though she was short of money. Coming to think of it, she could ask Marcus if they could stay with him.
"There was another sighting of justice," Marion said.
Emily could have hugged the younger girl for trying to change the subject. 4 workers claimed they saw him standing near the docks, watching the boats. General Pollock made a rude noise.
"And how much had they had to drink at the time?"
"Antony, son of Emile, was replaced by a stone statue," Sienna said. "And while Alba was in shock, I don't think she was lying."
"Antony was turned to stone," Karen said.
Emily blinked.
"Antony and Alba?" "Alba is a friend of mine," Karen said. "Antony was her very brave boyfriend who was turned to stone."
"That's what it says in the books," Marion said. "Those who transgress against the god will be turned to stone."
"Magic can turn someone into stone," Sienna said curtly. "You know how to stop someone in their tracks if necessary. There's no reason to believe the rumors. It would hardly be the first time someone claimed to have seen a god."
Emily leaned forward, interested.
"What do the stories say?"
"That justice will return to pass judgment on us all," Marion said. "And those who defy his law will be turned to stone."
"Except there's still no reason to believe the stories," Sienna said. "The victims, all of them, might easily have been targeted by their enemies. All someone would need to commit the murders would be a warped petrifaction spell."
She shrugged.
"And Speaker Janus, no doubt, has taken advantage of the rumors," she added. "Attendance at his services is up."
Emily glanced at Caleb.
"Janus?" "The High Priest of Justice," Marion said, before Caleb could answer. "He's a very powerful man."
"And this is not a suitable conversation for the dinner table," Sienna said.
She gave her daughter a sharp look.
"We'll discuss other matters later."
"Yes, Mother," Marion said in a sweet voice. "And what should we talk about?"
"Your schooling, perhaps," Sienna said. "You'll be off to school in a year."
She looked at Emily.
"You can give her some advice, perhaps," she added. "You've seen 2 of the magic schools."
Emily nodded shortly.
"Later, perhaps," Caleb said. "We have much to do tomorrow."
"Indeed you do," Sienna said. "And we shall discuss it tonight."
Chapter 4 Emily couldn't help mulling over the godly affair as Karen fetched the dessert, a syrupy sponge so sweet she had to drench it in custard before she could eat it. Croce insisted on chatting with his father about life in the military, making it clear he intended to seek an apprenticeship as soon as he completed his time at Stronghold. General Pollock attempted to convince Emily to talk about life in the sorcerer's tent, but Emily had to admit she hadn't seen that much of military life. She'd certainly never taken a full apprenticeship with a combat sorcerer.
Karen, I would appreciate it if you were to take Frida to her room and sit with her for a while, Sienna said, once dessert was finished. Emily, would you please accompany me?
Emily felt a cold weight settle in her chest as she rose, following Sienna through a pair of solid wooden doors. Someone had embedded spells within the wood, ranging from a simple protection and warding spell to a number of nastier tricks that would freeze, blind, and, at worst, kill anyone who tried to enter without permission. The study behind the protections was simpler than she'd expected. A desk, a set of overflowing bookshelves, and a pair of wooden chairs. But it clearly belonged to a skilled magician. She could feel the hairs on the back of her neck prickling as the interior wards peered at her, assessing her power. If Sienna hadn't been there, Emily doubted she could have made it out before the wards tore her to shreds.
"Take a seat," Sienna said. Her voice was surprisingly calm. "We have a great deal to discuss."
Emily sat on one of the wooden chairs, feeling like a mouse being eyed by a cat. Sienna was powerful and skilled, which made her dangerous. Emily didn't have any reason to believe that Sienna might want her dead, but she knew, all too well, that a grieving mother might not be in any state to think logically. Her eldest son had died because she'd convinced him to accompany her to Heart's Eye. And would Lady Barb be any kinder, Emily asked herself, if she'd had a son who died on your watch? Emily forced herself to remain calm as Sienna took her seat. Sienna was a combat sorceress, no small achievement for a woman. No allowances would have been made for her when she started working towards her mastery. Indeed, her tutor would probably have pushed her harder, just to make sure she could keep up with the men. Even now, after giving birth to 5 children, Sienna was formidable. Emily couldn't help a pang of envy. Casper and Caleb, and their siblings, probably didn't realize just how lucky they were.
"I'm afraid the decision to send Frida as your chaperone is quite awkward," Sienna said curtly. It was, Emily realized, her version of small talk. "Her presence causes other complications."
Emily nodded shortly. Caleb was taken, but Croce was only a year or so younger than Frida. Not enough to avoid a scandal if he were caught spending unsupervised time with her. Emily doubted Frida would be interested. She'd turned down 12 offers at Whitehall, but it would still be embarrassing. People would talk. And while she doubted it would be that irritating, in the long run, she could see Sienna's point.
"I apologize on behalf of my advisor," Emily said. She wasn't sure if Lady Barb was still her advisor, given that she'd left Whitehall after the Grand Master's death, but Emily had no intention of choosing another. I'm sure she would have come herself if the war hadn't placed demands on her time.
Sienna smiled. It didn't touch her eyes.
"The war comes first," she said. "Even with the necromancer dead, there will be other considerations."
"Yes," Emily said.
"There are points we have to discuss," Sienna said, shifting course. "And I expect you to listen."
Emily tensed. This was the meat of the matter.
"I will."
Sienna's face twisted. It took Emily a moment to realize that she was embarrassed.
"First, I am aware that you and Caleb have been sleeping together," Sienna said.
"I trust..."
Emily's mouth dropped open.
"He told you?"
Sienna snorted. "Can you imagine a young boy who'd want to discuss his love life with his parents?"
She pressed on before Emily could formulate a response.
"Of course he didn't tell me, but it's obvious from the way you two react to each other."
"Oh," Emily said. She had to fight to resist the urge to cover her face. She knew she was blushing brightly. Caleb's mother knew. What on earth was she supposed to say?
Sienna held up a hand. "I trust that you have been using precautions," she added.
"What sort of protections?"
Emily groaned.
"Do we have to?"
"Yes, we do," Sienna said. "What sort of protections have you been using?"
"Contraceptive potion," Emily said. She forced herself to be clinical.
"Both of us have been taking it."
"Good," Sienna said stiffly.
"I assume you know how to cast a protection charm?"
"Lady Barb talked me through it," Emily said.
God, she'd thought that conversation was embarrassing.
Barrier charms were perfect if they were cast properly.
But they didn't last long, so they had to be cast shortly before penetration. Did anyone have the mental discipline to cast such a charm under such circumstances? But we normally rely on potions. Sienna nodded. There are two important points I want to make to you, she said. She pointed a long finger at Emily. First, you are not to sleep together under my roof. Not until you're married. There's a charm on your room that will alert me if Caleb enters without my permission. Or any other man, for that matter. I understand the urges you'll have as a healthy young woman, but I won't allow you to slake them under my roof. Do you understand? Emily felt her cheeks grow even hotter. I understand. Caleb will hate me for this, Sienna added. She looked at the bookshelves, her face oddly pensive. But it's for his own good. I don't think he'll hate you, Emily said. He certainly won't be pleased. Sienna smiled rather thinly. But I have made it clear to him that he will regret it if he defies me. Ouch, Emily thought. Sienna cocked her head. And that leads us neatly to the second point. Emily braced herself. She didn't think anything could be worse than having the talk with her boyfriend's mother, but she knew she could be wrong. Not that she blamed Sienna. Not really. An unplanned pregnancy, or a scandal, would have all sorts of unfortunate repercussions. She had no idea what Sienna could do to her, beyond kicking her out of the house, but Caleb could be disowned. Or worse. Just under 2 years ago, Caleb came to us, his parents, to request our blessing for a courtship, Sienna said. We discussed the matter at great length before agreeing, provisionally, to grant him our blessing. You are a child of many worlds, the daughter of a great sorcerer, as well as a great noblewoman in your own right. Caleb's decision to court you carried risks. Not that many, Emily said. You might have rejected him, which would have been a blow to his pride, Sienna said. Her face flickered with droll amusement. And if you'd done it publicly, it would have embarrassed the family and turned us into laughing stocks. But even if you didn't, Emily, it ran the risk of entangling us with the affairs of your father and Zangaria. We seriously considered denying Caleb our blessing because of the risk of being dragged into politics. My dear grandfather would certainly have been concerned about the danger. Emily swallowed hard. Your grandfather? The patriarch of House Waterfall, Sienna said. She shook her head, holding up a hand to stave off any further questions. We consented to the courtship, Emily, because we believed the risks could be managed. Caleb was a second son. His marriage is understandably of personal importance, but not particularly important to anyone outside the immediate family. We could have disowned him if things had threatened to get out of hand. Emily stared at her. You would have disowned your son for marrying me? Not for marrying you, Sienna said. For dragging us into a political morass. I believe your friend Marcus was disowned for similar reasons.
Yeah, Emily said.
She kept her thoughts to herself. She'd never thought about it like that before. She wished she didn't have to think about it now. It wasn't something that made her feel comfortable.
Things have changed, Sienna said. It was an understatement. Caleb is now my heir. A year ago, I would have said there was no hope of him succeeding my grandfather, but things have changed. If he marries you, Emily, he'll be in a very strong position indeed. And yet, there is your current disagreement with King Randor. Where exactly do you stand?
I chose to leave, Emily said stiffly. She needed time to think, and perhaps discuss the matter with Caleb. I am no longer the Baroness.
You are, even if you're in exile, Sienna corrected.
She sighed heavily.
You entered into the courtship on the understanding that you were going to be marrying a second son. Caleb was not expected to inherit anything beyond a small legacy. You may, if you wish, back out now. No one would blame you for taking a moment to reassess your position.
Emily met her eyes. Do you want me to marry Caleb?
I want you to be aware of the problems facing you, Sienna said.
It wasn't an answer.
And there is a further problem. There are already rumors that you deliberately killed Casper to clear the way for your boyfriend.
Emily felt a flash of hot temper.
I did not.
If I thought otherwise, young lady, we would be having a very different discussion, Sienna said dryly. But people will talk. If you were to marry Caleb, and he were to become Patriarch of Waterfall, you'd be combining magical and aristocratic power to make a formidable power base. Even if he didn't become the formal patriarch, he'd be in a strong position to steer family affairs from behind the scenes. And you, behind him, would be pulling the strings.
You didn't answer my question, Emily said. She felt her magic rising with her temper, and ruthlessly forced it down. Sienna could probably sense it already. Do you want me to marry Caleb?
What I want doesn't matter, Sienna said. She looked down at the wooden floor. When she spoke, there was a hint of pain in her voice. Emily, for people like me, like us, marriage is rarely a matter of personal choice. We make the matches that suit our families and hope that love blossoms. I've known girls and boys who were broken-hearted because they couldn't marry the people they loved, or were disowned after they eloped. I was the youngest daughter of the youngest son, and yet I had to argue for weeks to convince the patriarch to bless my marriage.
Emily frowned. Alessa had said much the same when she'd been preparing to meet her first set of potential suitors. She'd even admitted that her father might pick one of the young noblemen who'd traveled to Zangaria, dismissing whatever concerns Alessa might have about the match. Emily hadn't been able to understand it. Not really. Alessa was the crown princess, and she would be queen in time, but she didn't have much choice about who she married. It had been sheer luck that she'd remained unmarried long enough to start a proper relationship with Jade. And yet, it wasn't something Emily wanted for herself. She liked Caleb. She even loved him. She simply didn't know enough about love to be sure of what she was feeling. The idea of outsiders discussing her marriage, even trying to manipulate it, was horrific. She had no intention of trying to use the match as part of a stealth takeover of House Waterfall. But they have reason to worry, she thought grimly. Fulvia might well have gotten started that way, too. She looked down at her hands, studying the ring Void had given her. It sparkled under the light, magic glittering against her pale skin. Was it fair to ask Caleb to give up his family for her? She wouldn't give up Lady Barb and Void for anyone, even Caleb. And she didn't want to give Caleb up, either, and... You married a mundane, she said. She touched the snake bracelet with her fingers, tracing out the scaly pattern. Doesn't that... Sienna's face darkened. The magic level jumped sharply. An insult. She'd given Sienna an insult. For a moment, Emily was sure Sienna would throw a curse, or simply slap her, before Emily could even formulate an apology. I would not have married him if I hadn't felt he was a good person, Sienna said. Her voice was icy cold. And my grandfather would not have approved the match if he hadn't felt that Pollock would bring something to the family. She met Emily's eyes. And someone less forgiving than I would have taken that as a challenge to a duel, she added. Dueling champion or not, I suggest you learn to watch your tongue. I'm sorry, Emily said quickly.
So you should be, Sienna said. I would have been thrashed to within an inch of my life if I'd said that at your age.
She gave Emily a sharp glance. Your father neglected a very important part of your education, young lady. Etiquette is what keeps us magicians from tearing ourselves apart.
My father was always more interested in magic, Emily said. Sienna didn't know, couldn't know, the truth. Explaining that she'd come from an alternate world would have stirred up questions that she couldn't begin to answer. Much of my education came from the servants. Sienna sniffed in disapproval.
Servants are not good tutors for young magicians, she said shortly. They are rarely versed in the background required to teach properly.
She shrugged.
You're here for a couple of weeks before the three of you go back to Whitehall, she said. I suggest that you spend some time considering what I told you. If you and Caleb wish to proceed with the courtship, you may do so with your eyes wide open.
Thank you, Emily said.
She sat back, feeling oddly drained. It wasn't the worst conversation she'd ever had, but it was definitely the most embarrassing, and it was almost surreal. What sort of choice was she supposed to make? The idea of tying herself down at 21 was terrifying. And yet,
She was part of this culture now, for better or worse. She promised herself, silently, that she would write to Lady Barb, and Void, asking for advice. Maybe she could ask Sergeant Miles, too. He'd have a different perspective on everything. And Sergeant Harkin, too, if he'd survived, she thought. She felt a pang of guilt. The sergeant would have been very disappointed in her if he'd realized her mistake. I wish I'd had a chance to thank him for everything. Sienna rose.
I'll take you to your room. Caleb and I will be having a long talk this afternoon. Then I'll be taking him to the temple. I suggest you catch up on your sleep. Karen will be downstairs if you need anything. Everyone else will be going out. Emily glanced at her watch. It was early afternoon.
I don't know how long I'll sleep, she said. She felt tired, but going to sleep now would only make it harder for her to sleep in the evening. Do we have the run of the house?
Stay out of the bedrooms and any room that's warded closed, Sienna said. She motioned for Emily to follow her. There's a small collection of books in the living room, including a couple that were passed down from my great-grandfather. You might like them, or you can ask Karen for anything she might have.
I understand, Emily said. Sienna gave her an unreadable look.
I'm aware this isn't easy for you. Just bear in mind that it isn't easy for anyone else either.
I know, Emily said. I am truly sorry Casper was killed.
So am I, Sienna said.
She looked older, just for a second.
I always knew there was a possibility that he'd die, but I didn't want to believe it. None of us did. And now, his death has opened up a whole new can of worms. And we have to deal with them now.
She shook her head.
Come with me.
Emily rose and followed her through the doors and up a narrow flight of stairs. It was so narrow that Emily doubted a large man could get up the stairs without getting stuck. She thought of the servant corridors in King Randor's castle, the tiny passageways intended to keep the servants hidden from their lords and masters. She'd used similar corridors to sneak around at Whitehall. She glanced up at Sienna.
Do you have any servants?
I have a cook and a maid, Sienna said briskly. They work regular hours and live outside the house. The maid is not there to help you with your hair. I've had to make that point clear to both the girls regularly. It never seems to sink in.
They reached the top of the stairs and walked down a short corridor.
This is your room, Sienna said as they reached an unmarked wooden door. She knocked smartly and waited.
You're sharing with Frida. Remember what I said. Do not invite Caleb into the room.
I won't, Emily said.
And don't go into his room either, Sienna added sharply.
The door swung open, revealing Frida.
It'll just get you both in hot water.
I understand, Emily said. She couldn't help feeling annoyed. She'd missed sharing a bed with Caleb. It was hard to believe now that she'd ever been reluctant to let him do more than kiss her.
Did my bag get sent up?
It's here, Frida said.
Have a good nap, Sienna said. I'll see you at dinner time.
Chapter 5
So, Frida said as she closed the door, I've been told I have to set some ground rules.
Emily scowled at her.
And who told you that?
Lady Barb, Frida said. She winked. You don't want to argue with her, do you?
I also happen to know she's not here, Emily said wryly. Do you get to set the ground rules?
Frida looked embarrassed, a hint of a blush on her face.
This is serious, she said.
Emily resisted the urge to roll her eyes. Frida was no more a part of the city's culture than she was. Her upbringing in the mountains hadn't taught her how to comport herself in the big city. She would have been married off by now if she'd lived long enough to grow into womanhood. Only the discovery of her magic had saved her from a life of total obscurity. She looked up, inspecting the room. It was small. Smaller than her bedroom at Whitehall, but larger than the one she'd shared with Lady Barb 9 months ago. A pair of beds, no larger than the bed on the ship, reclined against the wall. A small dressing table, complete with a mirror spell on a reflective surface, was positioned neatly under the window. Someone, probably Sienna, had carved out a set of runes around the window frame, each one configured to uphold the household wards and keep intruders from breaking in.
They wouldn't be enough to keep her from forcing the window wide open, she thought, as she walked to the window and peered out, but they'd probably make it impossible to sneak in and out of the house without triggering the wards. The street below was so busy, she doubted anyone could climb up without being noticed. Frida cleared her throat.
Emily, Lady Barb was serious.
I know, Emily said. She felt a flicker of amusement, mingled with annoyance. It was nice to have someone looking out for her, but did Frida have to be so overbearing? I won't do anything with him under this roof.
People will talk, Frida pointed out. You have to be careful.
Emily smiled. Frida had grown up in a village where everyone knew what everyone else was doing. There was no real privacy, even for married couples. A pair of teenagers couldn't find time to themselves without being caught and punished. She couldn't help wondering, as she had the first time she'd visited the Cairngorms, if a particularly devious suitor sometimes set out to entrap a girl into marrying him. It didn't have to be a boy, either. A girl could easily try the same trick.
I'll be careful, she promised.
She turned and picked up her bag. She'd only brought a couple of outfits, neither of which were really suitable for city life. Did Lady Barb send some clothes, too?
There's a trunk under the bed, Frida said. I have orders to take you to a dressmaker if they don't fit.
Thank you, Emily said. Lady Barb wouldn't have opened her trunk at Whitehall, even if it hadn't been heavily warded. No one, not even Grandmaster Gordian, would have broken that taboo unless he saw no alternative. What else did Lady Barb say? She opened the trunk and dug through the small collection of clothes as Frida spoke.
Just that you have to respect the family's mourning period, she said, and that you should take part in their ceremonies, even if things don't work out, and that I have to behave myself.
Emily looked up and smiled. My, what have you been doing? Frida smiled back.
I managed to catch Master Tor in one of my spells, back when I was playing freeze tag, she admitted. He was not amused.
Oh, dear, Emily said. She tried hard, very hard, not to giggle. I imagine he was furious.
He was, Frida said. I would still be in detention if I hadn't been summoned here.
Ouch, Emily said. She pulled a dress and a set of undergarments from the trunk and placed them on the dressing table, then poked her way through the rest of the trunk. A small bottle of contraceptive potion she doubted she'd have a chance to use, a notebook and set of pencils, and, buried right at the bottom, a collection of books and a short note. She picked up the note and read it, then glanced at the book titles. Lady Barb expected her to have read them from cover to cover before she returned to Whitehall.
They're for your studies, Frida said. She looked doubtful. You'll have to work hard to catch up.
There goes my summer, Emily said. Sergeant Miles had promised to help her study over the summer, if she needed to retake her end-of-year exams. She'd hoped to be able to explore more of the nameless world, but exams came first.
Do you know what you're doing for summer? I've put my name down for work experience, Frida said.
For a moment, she looked agonizingly young.
I don't know if I've been accepted yet.
I'm sure you will be, Emily said reassuringly. She put the books on the dressing table, then closed the trunk and shoved it back under the bed. Technically, she knew she should have locked it with magic, but there was nothing particularly valuable inside. Besides, she knew from Lady Barb that some household wards reacted badly to locking spells. It would be better to check with Sienna before doing anything that might provoke a reaction.
I need a nap.
She also needed a wash, but she was too tired.
Will you be all right here?
Of course.
Frida tapped her own trunk. I've got school work, too.
Emily nodded as she checked the door. The ward spell was simple enough, keyed to bar men, and only men, from touching the handle or opening the door. The maid would have no trouble entering the room if she dared. Emily wouldn't have cared to work in a magician's house, particularly when the magician's older children would be using their magic to keep intruders out of their domain. Touching the wrong thing, even in perfect innocence, could get the maid turned into a frog. She grimaced at the thought. The games students played at Whitehall were less amusing when played outside school. She undressed rapidly, then climbed into bed and closed her eyes. It felt odd to lie in an unmoving bed after 5 days on a sailing ship. She told herself she would get over it and concentrated on her mental discipline. She didn't expect sleep would come easily. She'd never found it easy to sleep in a new place, at least for the first few days. But it would come. She heard Frida opening her trunk just as the darkness rose up and overwhelmed her. A hand touched her shoulder. She jerked up, one hand raised to cast a spell. Frida jumped back, raising both of her hands in surrender. Emily caught herself and sat upright in bed, shaking her head in annoyance. The light pouring in through the window was dimmer somehow. It had to be dusk. "It's dinner time," Frida said. "Did you sleep well?" Emily shook her head. She hadn't dreamed, and she felt as if she hadn't slept at all. Her body felt tired and grimy. She swung her legs over the side and stood, her legs wobbling as if they expected the floor to shift under her weight. It took her a long moment to remember that she was no longer on the boat, that the floor wasn't going to be rolling back and forth. She rubbed her eyes tiredly. The sooner she got over the last few days, the better. Frida bit off a curse.
"What happened to you?"
Emily looked down at herself. "I fought a traitor and a necromancer," she said, as she studied the bumps and bruises. Most of them had healed, but enough remained to remind her that she'd been in a fight. She rubbed at a particularly nasty bruise on her upper arm, silently grateful that it was no longer sore. The fight had been so vicious that she honestly didn't know when she'd been struck. "I'll heal soon."
"You should go find a healer," Frida said.
She glanced towards the window.
"We could go now."
"There's no pain," Emily assured her. She touched one of the scars, remembering the moment when white flames had lashed out at her. The pain had been so excruciating that her memories were jumbled. "I'll recover in time."
"Make sure Caleb knows you're not quite recovered," Frida said. "And I'll hex him if he tries to make you do anything too energetic."
Emily sighed, torn between embarrassment and irritation. She knew Frida didn't like Caleb. "I'm sure he'll respect his mother's wishes," she said reluctantly. A low chanting sound echoed through the window. She turned to peer through the glass, watching as a number of worshippers hurried out of their homes and headed to the temples. There were a dozen religions, she recalled, that prayed at sunrise and sunset.
"Is there a toilet here?"
After Frida pointed them out, Emily used the surprisingly modern facilities, then changed into a long blue dress and inspected herself in the mirror. Her hair was still a mess, but the rest of her looked reasonably presentable. She should be grateful, she supposed, that Lady Barb had packed her trunk instead of Queen Marlena. Alas's mother would have sent along enough dresses to outfit every girl in Whitehall, along with gifts and other largesse, intended to forge a bond between them. She glanced at her bag, wondering if she had time to write a brief message to Alassa and her other friends. She really should have done it as soon as she arrived, but she'd been too wrapped up in other matters. "Later," she told herself firmly.
"Come on," Frida said. "Being late for dinner would be insulting."
Emily nodded as they walked down the stairs. There was no sign of General Pollock or his youngest son when they reached the dining room. Caleb sat at the table, reading a book, while his mother quizzed him relentlessly on his studies. Emily winked at him as the two girls entered, carrying more bowls of stew. She had the feeling they were going to be eating fish for the foreseeable future. "I trust you slept comfortably," Sienna said, once the food was served. "I'm afraid we don't have any better rooms."
"It's better than sleeping in a tent," Emily said.
It helped that she wasn't sharing close quarters with 5 other magicians, all men. Or on a boat, for that matter. Sienna gave her an understanding glance.
"Your leg's still wobbly?"
"Just a little."
Emily rested her palm on the table. "I keep feeling as though the room is going to heal over."
"You get over it," Sienna said.
She smiled, rather dryly. "I used to love boating when I was a child."
"Perhaps we could take a fishing boat out through the gap," Caleb said. "Fish tastes better if you catch it yourself."
"But not if you cook it."
Marion stuck out her tongue.
"Don't marry my brother for his cooking, Lady Emily. He can't boil water without ruining it."
"My cooking is worse," Emily said. It was true. On Earth, she'd had no time to learn any more than the basics.
Her mother had never been particularly interested in cooking anything more complicated than scrambled eggs. I throw perfectly good ingredients together and wind up with a mess. I dare say that qualifies you to become an army cook. Sienna's lips twitched. I've yet to meet a military cook who couldn't turn a silk purse into a sow's ear. Emily had to smile. Is that why so many aristocrats brought along their own cooks? Naturally, Sienna said. And I imagine they brought their own food, too. She cocked her head. The official excuse is that poor food puts the men in a fighting mood, she added. But the truth is that hardly anyone can be bothered to organize proper food for anyone who doesn't have a title. Emily nodded in grim agreement. She'd seen enough during the campaign to know that Sienna was right. The aristocrats and the combat magicians had eaten well, while the common soldiers were lucky if they got enough to sustain themselves. Farrakhan had been on the verge of collapsing into a bloody revolution because its nobility had collected all the food, leaving the poor to starve. She tasted the stew. It was similar to the stew they'd had for lunch, but with a spiciness she found disconcerting. Marion passed her a piece of freshly baked bread, which she dipped into the liquid. It countered the spice, making it easier to eat. You'll enjoy sailing on a little boat, Caleb said. Would you like to try? If we can get through the gap, Emily said. She hadn't liked the look of those waves. The currents might have pushed the ship into the harbor, but they could easily dash the vessel against the rocks if the crew lost control. Is that safe? We'd probably hire a boat from the outer docks, Caleb said. Anyone who tries to pass through the dragon's teeth in a small boat is taking their life in their hands. It's been done, Karen said. Jolly did it on a bed. Jolly nearly drowned when he tried to get back in, Sienna said. Idiot should have had the sense to realize the currents were against him. If he'd let himself be pushed back out to sea, he could have found his way to the outer docks, or tried again at high tide. He was brave, Karen said. There's a difference between bravery and stupidity, Sienna said. She shot her oldest daughter a sharp look. I hope you weren't too impressed. Karen colored. Marion snickered at her discomfort. We'd have to scramble down the ladders, but it should be safe enough, Caleb said. Magic will break our fall if we lose our grip. Emily made a face. She wasn't sure she liked the idea of scrambling down wet ladders, even if she did have magic. Walking into a necromancer's lair had been incredibly dangerous, but she'd known, all too well, that she didn't have a choice. Taking on the necromancer directly was the only way to stop him from devastating an entire country. But taking a fragile boat out onto the open sea, she knew she could teleport away if things went to hell, yet she still didn't like it. We'll see. She suspected Sienna was judging her, although she had no idea what would appeal to the older woman. It sounds like fun. Caleb will take you to the temple tomorrow, Sienna said briskly. You can say a prayer before the god of the ocean, if you wish. You do have to pay your respects to Beneficence, Caleb added. I don't think you've been there before, have you? Emily shook her head. She hadn't stayed long the last time she'd visited the city. Lady Barb hadn't seemed inclined to take her to the temple either. She wasn't sure she wanted to go, but she knew it was important to Caleb and his family. Besides, she was curious. She'd only been to one other temple in her life, back in Zangaria. Her mother had certainly never bothered to take her to church. Make sure you take some fruit, Sienna ordered. And afterwards? I need to visit the bank, Emily said. Marcus had said he was in his office every day. If he wasn't, for whatever reason, she could leave him a message. He might take a day off every so often to visit Melissa. And then... I'm not sure. I'd like to visit the bank, Karen said. Perhaps later, Sienna said. She glanced at Frida. Caleb and Karen will be happy to show you the city.
Thank you,
Frida said politely. Emily concealed her amusement. Frida would probably be happier exploring on her own if Emily couldn't accompany her. She really didn't like Caleb that much. Maybe she'd get on better with Karen. She was only a year or so older than Frida, after all. I have a bottle of sleeping potion, if you wish to take it, Sienna said, when the dinner came to an end. Or you can read until you feel tired. I have letters to write, Emily said. She owed Alessa and her friends an update. I'll get some rest afterwards. Sienna nodded and led her daughters out of the room. Caleb sent Emily an embarrassed look. It was clear he didn't know quite how to act when his mother and his girlfriend were in the same room, and nodded to the door. Frida gave him a mock suspicious look as they walked up the stairs. Emily shot her a warning look in return. She understood Sienna's concerns, and Lady Barb's, but she wasn't going to allow either of them to control her life.
"We'll be outside tomorrow," Caleb whispered.
Frida slipped past them and hurried into the room, carefully leaving the door ajar.
"I wish."
He leaned forward to kiss her. Emily kissed him back, tensing as she sensed the spells crawling through the house. Caleb wasn't in her room. Surely mere kissing wouldn't set off the spells. He wrapped his arms around her, holding her tightly. She hugged him back, feeling a sudden hot flush. Her body was reminding her, sharply, of just how much she'd missed him.
"I look forward to it," she whispered back. "Are you going to be sneaking through the house at night?"
Caleb looked embarrassed.
"Mother would not be pleased," he said, "and she would notice."
Emily nodded. She'd seen monitoring charms at Whitehall, but Sienna's spells were an order of magnitude more complex. Sienna would know, if she cared to ask, precisely what her children were doing at all times. Emily couldn't help thinking there was a fine line between being protective and smothering, and that Sienna, for all her obvious concern for her children, was on the wrong side.
"I understand."
She kissed him again, just as she heard Frida clearing her throat inside the room.
"I'll see you tomorrow."
She kissed him one final time, then stepped into the room and closed the door. Chapter 6 Emily was mildly disappointed when she woke the following morning to discover that Caleb hadn't tried to sneak into her room. He'd said as much, but still. She shook her head, telling herself not to be silly. She wasn't the only person in the room. The prospect of Caleb accidentally sneaking into the wrong bed was the stuff of bad romantic comedies, not real life. Frida would be understandably horrified if Caleb climbed into her bed. She washed, changed into a new dress, and then checked the chat parchments. Alassa, Jade, and Emeka had written brief replies, but they were clearly distracted by greater matters. The Gorgon had added a reply of her own, talking about a new piece of magic that linked into some of her older spell work. Emily couldn't help feeling a flicker of wistfulness as she read her words, then added a comment. She hadn't had the time to explore new spells over the past few weeks. "And Caleb and I have to continue our project," she thought. It would be harder, she thought, now they were sleeping together. How are we supposed to remain focused? Frida came out of the bathroom, wearing a long dark dress that fell to her ankles. She'd clearly put some effort into her appearance, something that surprised Emily. Frida was pretty enough, in her own way, but she rarely bothered trying to enhance her looks with charms or beauty products. She couldn't help wondering if Frida was trying to impress someone. "You look good," she said. "Are you meeting someone?"
"No." Frida colored. "I just thought I should try to look better if I was walking next to you."
Emily looked down at herself. The blue dress was one of 10 that had been chosen by Queen Marlena after her first attempts to clothe Emily had ended poorly. It suited her, Emily felt. It drew attention to her face and hair without being too tight around her bust or hips. And yet it was hardly fancy. The only thing that made it stand out from something Karen or Marion would wear was the expensive cloth, which wasn't noticeable unless someone happened to touch her sleeve. She could walk through the city without attracting attention, just another unmarried girl of marriageable age. She'd just have to keep her hair hidden behind a small glamour.
"I think you look fine," she said.
She held out a hand. "Shall we go downstairs to breakfast?" She wasn't surprised, when she reached the bottom of the stairs, to discover that Sienna and Caleb were chatting quietly. Emily couldn't help wondering precisely what they'd been talking about. Caleb's mother might have decided to caution her son against kissing her, as well as everything else. Or she might have sat him down for a long talk about the courtship, and precisely where he saw it going. The thought caused her a bitter pang. Casper's death had changed so much. As a younger son, Caleb's marriage wasn't important. As the oldest surviving son, his marriage would shape the future of the entire family.
which isn't just the general and his wife, she reminded herself. There's an entire clan of magicians who might be affected. Please eat. Sienna waved a hand towards a plate of bread and honey. I believe the honey comes from cockatrice. Emily nodded, meeting Caleb's eyes. He looked embarrassed, suggesting that she was right to worry about what his mother had told him. She forced herself to look away as Sienna hurried out of the room, leaving the three of them alone. A moment later, Karen entered, yawning loudly as she took a seat. "We'll buy some fruit on the way," Caleb said. He took a piece of bread and slathered it in honey. "And we might as well take some bread, too."
"The god will appreciate it."
Frida chewed her bread with every evidence of enjoyment.
"It's very good. We have a good cook."
Karen glanced at Emily.
"Try not to let my brother eat too much outside the house. There's a big meal this evening."
"She means she wants you to take me for lunch so there's more food for her," Caleb said. He sounded more natural now his mother was out of the room. "But we could go visit one of the new burger bars if you wish." Frida snickered. Emily rubbed her forehead, embarrassed. She'd founded the burger bars, or at least she'd introduced the concept, when King Randor had given her cockatrice. It still amused her in so many ways that burgers and pizzas had become luxury foodstuffs all around the continent. Fast food still wasn't particularly fast. It would be years before the nameless world had anything to match McDonald's or Pizza Hut, but it was clear evidence of the changes she'd wrought.
"I might enjoy it," Emily said. "They've become places for youths to hang out," Karen informed her. "I go to the nearest one whenever I come home."
Caleb grinned. Emily washed her hands and checked her appearance as soon as they finished breakfast, then followed Caleb and Frida onto the street. It was nearly 10 o'clock local time, but the streets were already crowded. The street magicians were doing their best to attract attention, casting brilliant spells into the air. Street sellers were calling out to passing tourists, inviting them to sample their wares. The racket was deafening. Emily checked the charms on her money pouch carefully. Lady Barb had warned her that the streets were often teeming with pickpockets, and then placed another charm on herself. Anyone who tried to touch her without permission would be in for a nasty surprise. She forced herself to remain calm as the crowd shifted around her, making way for a black carriage and two horses. The driver was cracking a whip loudly, waving it around as if he intended to start flogging the crowd. Emily half expected to hear people screaming in agony, then be forced to watch helplessly as the rest of the crowd attacked the carriage, but it seemed the driver had just enough sense not to actually hurt anyone. She couldn't help wondering why the passenger didn't simply get out and walk. The streets were so crowded that getting from one side of the city to the other would be easier on foot. "That's one of the guildmasters," Caleb said when she asked. "They're the only ones allowed to use carriages at all times." Frida bumped against Emily.
"Perhaps we should have waited for another hour," she said, as they elbowed their way through the crowd. "The streets would be calmer then."
"I hope so," Emily thought. They left the carriage, and its cursing driver, behind, as they slowly made their way to the temples. Emily hadn't realized when they'd walked through yesterday that there were actually two streets with a single massive temple at the crossroads. A long line of people waited outside, some clearly visitors from outside the city. Caleb waved to a street salesman as they joined the line, purchasing a small bag of apples. Emily couldn't help wondering if those, too, had come from cockatrice. Her barony was the closest place where apples grew. Caleb muttered instructions in her ear. "When you walk into the temple, proceed through the left door. That's the women's section. Kneel in front of the statue to make your devotions, then place the fruit with all the other donations, and then walk out the back and wait for us there."
Emily glanced at him. "What happens to the fruit?"
"Officially, the god eats it." Caleb's face twisted in droll amusement. "Unofficially, the priests distribute it to the poor and the needy."
"Oh," Emily said.
She glanced up as she heard a bell ring, just once. The line inched forward, then stopped again. Two men were arguing in front of her, chatting about something. Three more walked past her, heading towards the other temples. They wore the red robes she'd seen before, and they weren't the only ones. There were so many people on the streets that it was hard to be sure, but there were at least 30 hands of justice within eyeshot. They patrolled, moving up and down the street.
Their eyes missed nothing. There's more of them now, Emily thought. She couldn't help finding that ominous. A number of hands were carrying whips. And what are they doing?
It felt like hours before the line finally reached the door. Caleb gave her hand a squeeze as they stepped into the temple. It was strikingly cool inside, and motioned to the left-hand door. The women ahead of her waited, as patiently as they could. Every time the bell rang, one of them walked through the door and vanished. Emily felt a shiver run down her spine as she reached out with her senses. Magic, powerful magic, was woven into the temple. No matter how hard she looked, she couldn't see anything beyond the door. She wasn't even sure what summoned the men to enter the temple. Emily stepped through the door as the bell rang, feeling vaguely silly. She'd never believed in the Christian god, let alone loci gods that belonged to a lone city. She had met powerful creatures, yet they weren't gods. And yet, she felt a stab of pain between her breasts, a warning that there was subtle magic in the air. She touched the rune she'd carved on her chest and glanced behind her. It wasn't exactly a surprise to see that the door she'd come through had vanished. There was no way back. Bracing herself, she walked down the corridor and into a shrine. The subtle magic grew stronger, forcing her to grit her teeth in pain. A non-magician would have been swept away without realizing something was wrong. Hell, a trained magician without specific protections would still have had problems. The air seemed still somehow as she looked around the shrine. It felt as though something was just biding its time before happening. Her eyes swept the room, warily. A single statue stood on a plinth, looking down at her. It was human, she thought, yet idealized, practically perfect in every way. The outfit it wore was smart without being pretentious. She couldn't help thinking that the Beneficence loci looked more like a traitor than the kings or aristocrats she'd seen depicted in Zangaria. And yet, didn't that fit the city? Beneficence had been a hive of innovation even before she'd introduced the new learning. It had certainly been a center of commerce. She looked past the god, seeing the pile of food and drink at the far end of the room. The walls were bare, save for a handful of powerful runes. Preservation runes, she realized, established so long ago that their magic was firmly in place. It was an impressive piece of work, all the more so for, presumably, not having been designed by trained magicians. A piece of food left in the room would not decay. Time would only resume for the food when it was removed. The priests wouldn't accidentally poison anyone. Did she have to kneel? She wasn't sure. She didn't believe in the god. It meant less to her than Christmas or Easter, two religious celebrations that had become secular holidays more noted for shameless materialism than religious contemplation. She'd certainly never met a god. Alassa was the only one of her friends who'd become a devotee, and Emily had never been sure if her friend genuinely believed, or if Alassa had merely found a way to annoy her father. Emily couldn't help wondering what Jade thought of it. The crone was hardly a comfortable goddess to follow. Caleb would be hurt if I didn't pay my respects, she thought. But he'll never know, the nasty part of her mind pointed out. No one will know what happened inside the temple. She stared at the statue for a long moment, then knelt, briefly. Nothing happened. There was no sense of heightened presence, no awareness of something greater than her. She'd felt greater things while encountering demons or falling helplessly through time. Here, there was nothing but carefully shaped magic. Feeling oddly disappointed, she rose and walked over to the food. Countless worshippers had passed through the room, leaving everything from pieces of meat to bottles of drink. She put the apples down, silently hoping the priests didn't eat them themselves, then walked out the rear entrance. Caleb already waited there. "You were in there a while," he said. His tone was light, but his eyes were worried. "Are you all right?" "Yeah," Emily said. "It was just my first time inside a major temple." Caleb gave her an odd look as they waited for Frida. He knew the truth of her origins now, but she suspected he had a hard time believing it. It was easier to believe she was Void's daughter, raised in isolation, than that she might have come from a whole other world. She wondered, absently, what he'd make of the Christian god. A single, all-powerful being made more sense, she felt, than hundreds of limited entities.
A god wasn't anything more than another powerful creature. Frida joined them a moment later.
I've never seen such a large temple, she said. How many people does it feed?
I have no idea, Caleb said. But anyone can come for a meal if they wish.
Emily kept her thoughts to herself as they walked down the steps and onto the street.